Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this evening's edition of the Holohoax. You know there were no gas chambers in Germany, that 6 million did not die as a result of an extermination campaign perpetrated upon their race by Hitler, because Hitler did not perpetrate any such genocidal campaign against them. The truth is, the Jews, during the 40s, were communists, perfectly allied with the communist Russians, who later became our archenemy. But during the course of World War II, because we were betrayed by our president, President Eisenhower, President Roosevelt, both of Jewish descent, we allied ourselves with the Jewish Bolsheviks and entered into a fratricidal war in which hundreds of millions of white men killed white men. 100 million white people were killed during the Russian Revolution alone, and that doesn't even begin to count up the numbers of our people who died on the battlefield. Tonight we'll be talking about the white race as opposed to other races, and what we can do to maintain ourselves as a race, to prevent ourselves from going extinct through race mixing, and this campaign that's apparently been perpetrated on our country by the Jews since they, not we, won World War II. The latest development of which is that hundreds of thousands of alien Negroes from the darkest part of Africa, including the Mau Maus, the Somalis, the real cannibalistic, strange types, are being transplanted into our whitest white communities. And what can we do to stop it? I think there's still time for the white man to simply wake up and speak up. We have to say ouch. We know by now that Israel was heavily involved in the attack on 9/11, and yet we're still pursuing a course of conduct that satisfies the Jewish interests over America's interests. We're actually fighting the war in the Middle East, not for our own benefit, because we have plenty of money to buy oil, but to benefit the Jews by preparing to turn Greater Israel over to our communist enemies. Tonight I will discuss morals, white people's morals, versus the animalistic sexual mores of the blacks and the browns. Surprise, surprise, ladies and gentlemen, it does not befit a white woman to perform fellatio on her white sex partner. This is lower than what the animals do, but you've bought into the playboy image, and our women are being demoralized and really seriously psychologically harmed, not only in their own souls, but more importantly in their relationship with their husbands and lovers. We'll discuss circumcision, how wrong it is, how Jewish, how black, and how white people simply mustn't do it. We'll talk about whether or not Jesus was a Jew, and if he was he one of us? Or is it possible that the Jesus myth is a lie? Did Jesus actually die on the cross? Or did he fake his death, and that gave him the ability to walk among his disciples and pretend to have been risen from the dead? We'll discuss the fact that the National Geographic, after being a very ethical institution supporting fascism and racism for decades, has now finally succumbed and is a completely communistic organization. And of course, as usual, I will point out that the war against Iraq was perpetrated not to satisfy American interests, but in furtherance of Greater Israel, to be turned over, as I said, to our communist enemies, the Jews. I have Dish TV, and one of the channels is called the Africa Channel, and it shows in beautiful Technicolor different situations that are going on in Africa today, one of which is the transportation of hundreds of thousands of Somalis to the United States. And they show them in their native habitat, how odd they are, how un-American, how unsuited they are to live in America,
And then it shows them going to classrooms where they're taught how to live with English-speaking people and how to get acclimated to America. But I think that that's not a wise decision on the part of the United Nations. And I think the white people in America are actually being punished for being too tolerant, for being kind and loving. Because it's ridiculous to put 100,000 Somalis in the middle of, for example, Lewiston, Maine, which they've done, and Texas, which they're going to do, and Kansas, and all kinds of other pure white communities. It is a stupid social engineering policy. I understand that they're starving. I understand they need help. But if you're going to transplant hundreds of thousands of Somalis, transplant them, and if solving their starvation problem is your goal, then find a place where they can be fed and clothed, but where there won't be so much culture shock. It's very destabilizing to an all-white community to have 20,000 Somalis transplanted into it. And the white community should be respected for what it is. There's no reason for all of this aggressive destroy and kill mission against all white communities in America. But I understand why it's happening. It's happening because white people are trained not to be rude. So the people in the United Nations know that if they do transplant these 20,000 Somalis in Lewiston, Maine, which they have done, for instance, the likelihood is that the white people will be less likely to complain than the blacks, the browns, or the yellows. And I think that's very, very unfair and unwise. The white man should not be punished with culture shock because he is trained to be so tolerant. He needs to react as the whites, as the yellows would react. He needs to say, no, we will not allow our cultural community to be disrupted this way. You take your 100,000 Somalis and take them to Mexico. Don't bring them into our house. We are a white people. Just as the Asian would say, we are a yellow people. We want our standards respected, and we don't want to train Somalis how to be Asians. And we don't want to train Somalis how to be white. Take them to a part of the world, if starvation is the problem, where they can get fed and clothed and housed, where they won't be such an oddity. Because we don't want to go through culture shock every time we step outside of our doors. And there's nothing hostile about that. It's just normal. It's just that the white man has been trained so long and so hard against ever saying anything against anybody or anything that he doesn't know how to react when 20,000 Somalis are put in his backyard. I'm trying to tell the white man to get over his politeness and figure out a way to communicate to the powers that be that it's not okay with him any more than it's okay with the Asian or any of the other tightly knit homogeneous societies, because we whites have the same right to our peace of mind as everybody else. The white man just has to overcome his reticence and start talking from his heart and his mind. When he goes to political meetings, he has to start saying, I don't like being bred out of existence by blacks and browns. And he knows he's going to be put down and called a racist and hated and reviled and shunned, but the white man is up to the challenge. He simply has to take the abuse and stand his ground and say, I don't like it. I don't want it. It's very important for the self-esteem of any person, and especially white people, to speak their hearts. If it doesn't feel good to have blacks and browns breeding at a much faster rate than whites and taking up much more of the county's resources and paying much less in taxes, and it hurts, the white man has to stand up and accept the abuse for saying, ouch. As long as the white man is afraid to speak his mind, he's going to be overridden by people who have the ability to speak their mind. The white man simply must not give up his right to have his voice heard. Of course he's going to be criticized. He's in the minority. Of course people are going to call him high and mighty and racist and multiple killer and all of the terrible things that they call the white man when he speaks his mind. But that's the price you pay for individuality. You have to stand up, say exactly what you feel, exactly what you think, and let the chips fall where they may. The white man needs to say how he feels when he hears filthy sex talk coming out of the thick lips of the blue-gummed Negro. He has the right to say, whoa, that's disgusting, that's offensive, and I'm not going to let my mind be demoralized by that filthy talk without protest. Now, of course, the people around him, the blacks and browns, will say, bad white man, you just acted as if your culture was superior to the black man's culture. Naughty, naughty, must not feel superior, white man. And the white man has to stand up straight and strong in the face of the criticism and say, I want my psyche protected from filth. I am a white man. I stand for cleanliness. I stand for morality, simplicity, and honor. And if I see a man talking disgusting, sexual, filthy talk, I'm going to object because I have the right to my peace of mind, and it disturbs me to hear filth coming out of anybody's mouth, but especially the mouth of a thick-lipped, blue-gummed nigger. And the white man should repeat the things that the black man says so that he can demonstrate why he's offended. For example, if a black man says to a white man, fuck you, you fat faggot, or, you know, something like that, the way you deal with that is you say, oh, excuse me, I just heard you say, fuck you, you fat faggot, and I'm not going to let you talk to me that way. So, please rephrase your statement. And if we do this all the time, gradually people are going to get used to the white man's voice, which up until now has been completely silenced out of fear of being offensive and politically incorrect. The white man needs to learn that what he has to say is acceptable. Just because he's been told it's not acceptable doesn't make it not acceptable. The truth is, if you'll stand up, speak your mind, politely but firmly, people will get used to the voice of the white man, and they won't get away with it anymore, planting 20,000 Somalis in their little white culture, because they'll know they're going to have to face the wrath and the voice of the white man. So it's very important for the white man to start speaking his mind and speaking his heart. And it's awkward at first, but it's well worth the price. Otherwise, you're accepting the fact that your voice isn't allowed to be spoken, which is the position of a slave. The white man is actually cooperating in his own dehumanization. And that, of course, we can't allow. Okay, well then, let's review. America gets hit on September 11th. The two Twin Towers fall to the ground. The Pentagon is hit. And the White House was aimed at, but not hit. An investigation ensues, which reveals that the Israelis knew it was going to happen, for which they have apologized, were following the perpetrators, for which they've bragged, and probably were involved in the architecturing of the plan itself. Next, Michael Chertoff, a Jew, is appointed to head the Department of Homeland Security. And in this position, he does two important things. One, Michael Chertoff gives safe harbor to three cells of Israeli spies, one 200 strong. His second official act is to put in jail David Duke, Matt Hale, and a couple of other white men who are trying to warn the United States that Israel attacked the Twin Towers on 9/11. So far, what we have is an attack against the United States, which appears to have been perpetrated by Israel. Michael Chertoff then stops the investigation into 9/11, which was his job to do, and his good friend President Bush continues to fight the Senate about opening up that investigation. So now we have an attack, a connection to Israel, a cover-up by Israel. Now we're being told by people who dare to call themselves patriots that we're teaching Iraq a lesson. Since Israel attacked us in 9/11, we, the strong-hearted, honorable, savage vengeance getters, are attacking not our enemy. We're not attacking Israel. For some odd reason, we're attacking Israel's enemy. So the glory of America is that after we are attacked, we go to work to make the attacker happy. That doesn't seem right to me. That doesn't seem American to me. See, really, there isn't much difference between Islam and Christianity. If you'd study the Christian texts and study what Jesus said he was what Islam said he was, a prophet and no more. He never claimed to be the Son of God. The idea of turning Christianity into a personality cult was the Jews. They decided that the only way to stop the Christians from getting anywhere and spreading the revelation of truth and love was to destroy the message. So St. Paul, who had not been getting very far torturing Christians and was just firming up their resolve, actually became the first pope and taught Christians what Jesus really meant, because they couldn't understand Jesus just by his words, just by his intelligent statements. Paul had to distort the message of Christianity from being an intelligent monotheistic religion based on reason and fairness into a fanatical personality cult. And that's what he did, and introduced torture as a means of converting Christians. So don't think for a second that the Christians have a clean record when it comes to conversions. Fanatical Christians are just as bad as fanatical Muslims, just as bad as any Jews. All the Jews are bad because they're completely lost. But the point I'm trying to make is we have no beef against moderate Muslims. Our beef is with the fanatical Christians, the fanatical Muslims, and all of the Jews. Those are the enemy. So what we have to do is push Israel back to her side of the partition plan, reinstate the moderate Muslims like Saddam Hussein, bring the primitive, superstitious, fanatical Muslims into the new world, and do what Bush promised to do and has not done, which is exterminate all of these terroristic groups that are popping up all over the world. We have all over the world the problem of subhuman cults of terrorists destroying the peace of the world order, and nothing's being done. President Bush promised us something he did not deliver. He promised to get rid of the fanatical terroristic cults, and he should have done that. He was doing fine with the Taliban. He was doing fine with Al-Qaeda, but then he stumbled and fell when he used the American military to fight Israel's enemy. He stumbled and he fell, and he put us about 6 months or a year behind schedule. There are terroristic groups all over the world who really are animals and who really do need to be exterminated. But by going to war for Israel, Bush has screwed up. The only hope on the horizon is the fact that apparently Bush is controlling Sharon to a certain extent and making him give up some of the lands that the Israelis have tried to steal from the Palestinians. But all in all, it does not look good. I don't think that the young Nazis should be shaving their head And I don't think they should be encouraging their beautiful white ladies to shave their long hair either. The silky, shiny, straight hair of the white man is a racial characteristic, and it's only because of some terrible force of demoralization that they're trying to fit in with the less attractive races by divesting themselves of that great legacy, their beautiful, long, silky, shiny hair. So I am appealing to all of the young Nazi youth to stop shaving your head, please. Try to rebel against the strong forces that want you to divest yourself of your racial characteristics. White people are by far the most beautiful race. Not only their skin color, their symmetrical face, their beautiful coloring, their beautiful blue eyes, but also their hair, long, silky, and shiny. Hang on to your hair, white men and women. Don't let anyone make you take it off. All it does is make you look a little bit more like them. Remember, they can never look like you, but you, unfortunately, can look like them. Set an example that they must follow. Don't follow their example. Do not shave your beautiful, shiny, silky, Caucasian, Anglo-Saxon, Aryan hair. You just have no idea the amount of pressure that's putting on white boys and girls to try to fit in with the non-whites. If they dare to stand straight and strong with their shiny hair glowing in the sun, if they dare to take on that peaceful expression that's typically white, they are attacked. They're attacked for being beautiful. They're attacked for their beautiful hair, their beautiful coloring, their beautiful posture. They're attacked for everything. So it's no wonder that they shave their head so that they can get lost in the crowd. But they have to stop. They have to stand straight and strong, look at the entire world right in the eye, and say, I am a beautiful, proud, white person. And if you don't like it, I don't care. I like it. Well, sure, white people look beautiful even when they shave their hair. They have by far the most beautiful face and the most intelligent expression. That's not the point. The point is the white man has to glorify himself. He's not going to be strong enough for battle against this huge majority. If there are only 3% pure white people in the world, which is what we think, you're going up against a majority of 97% to 3%, and you need all of the glory God has given you. And part of that glory is your special, super, shiny, shiny, silky, Anglo-Saxon hair. You just should not cut it off. It isn't enough that you are more beautiful by far than any race. You have to be more super plus extra, extra more beautiful than anybody else, because you're in a fight for your survival. And that this is no time for you to be taking your weapons and throwing them away. Use every weapon you have. The white man's weapon is his sweetness, his kindness, his mercy, his justice, his reason, his beauty, his sense of humor, and his sexuality. Don't get rid of any of these weapons. If you have beautiful hair, and you do if you're white, then show it off. Show it off, and you know you're breaking the hearts of the non-whites. You know every time a white man or woman shaves their head, 20,000 Jews are celebrating because their hair is kinky and dull and dusty and ugly. They can't stand to see that beautiful, shiny, silky hair waving in the breeze like some kind of flag. And because it is a flag, it's a symbol of being white. And you simply have to understand that you're falling for a trap if you get rid of any part of yourself that's beautiful, including putting tattoos on that come from the African culture or piercings that come from the lower primitive cultures. Don't do that, white people. Don't do any of that. Stand up for your white, your right to be white. And that means keep your hair long, keep the tattoos off, get rid of the piercings, and walk with pride. The question is, If white women are not supposed to give oral sex to their husbands, then what are they supposed to do? Now that is an amusing question, to say the least. I would think it would be self-evident what a husband and wife do in bed. Actually, if you would be so kind as to look at Hitler, you might like to see what kind of a human being he was. Take a look at a gallery of his personal artwork that he painted by himself at my website, which is www.monamontgomery.com, and you will see the character of Hitler revealed to be, through his own art, a very pleasant, intelligent, well-balanced man. The idea that Hitler is a monster is pure communist propaganda. It simply isn't true. There were no gas chambers. There was no intention on Hitler's part to exterminate the Jew. And 6 million did not die. It's all a lie. So, if you would take a look at Hitler, you might find a good example of a good white man, a gentle white man, the kind of white man we wish we could all be. An intelligent man who promotes the arts, has a good character, is loyal to one spouse that he truly loves, was an artist himself, and did a lot for Germany. That's who your Hitler is. Now, let's look at the Negro. The Negro is ugly physically. He tends to be immoral. He can't reason. He has no capacity for logic. His concept of God is a being who gives him favors in exchange for sacrificing men and animals, and he is a cannibal. So you have sort of a continuum here. You have the black man at the bottom of this continuum, and you have the German race at the top. Now, why is the German race being so pilloried, so hated at this particular time in history? I think it's because the white man has been far too tolerant of the subordinate races and has listened too long to childish whinings and cryings and complainings, to the point where the voice of the intelligent, self-disciplined white man is getting drowned out by the hue and cry of the babies who want more milk. And it has to stop. We just can't listen any longer to the whines and mewling cries of the black man, the brown man, and the Jew. Enough is enough. The white man became a human being 2 million years before the black man even became half human, which is what he is now. We've had several waves of hominids starting 7 million years ago with this little his name is Tomei Man. They discovered him in Chad, Africa 6 months ago. He's the first little hominid we've found, 7 million years old, with a brain like a chimpanzee and the face of a human. 4 million years ago, that's 2 million years later, we find Lucy, an Australopithecus africanus. She was half gorilla, half human. She looks a lot like a gorilla with sort of a sweet, girly face. And then, about 2 million years after that, Homo sapien developed, and white man emerged and settled down in England, in East Anglia. We're now digging up remains of these East Anglian Homo sapiens that are 800,000 years old. Now, as early ago as only 10,000 years ago, Neanderthal was still wandering around in Europe, Neanderthal being a subhuman race of hominid. So we had white Anglo-Saxon Homo sapien for 790 years, 790,000 years. And then, only 10,000 years ago, the black man is still trying to work his way out of the mud and is walking around as Neanderthal. Now, I don't think it would be totally out of keeping with human nature for Homo sapien to to entirely exterminate Neanderthal, even though the United Nations says it's wrong. Every time man has taken an evolutionary step forward, he has both intermarried with and slain and exterminated the hominid that came before him. Why should it stop now? What is going to stop nature from taking her course? Why should Homo sapien not completely exterminate Neanderthal? That's the question. Not why should we, not is it wrong or right, just why won't we? Can you give me one good reason why the subhuman, sub-Saharan Negro, who is a cannibal, who worships a god that rewards sacrifice of animals and humans, who has no brain, who has 8 times the testosterone of the Homo sapien, why should he not be exterminated? That is the question. Not is the white man evil for exterminating him, but why should the white man not exterminate him? There's nothing bloodthirsty about a modern, new Homo sapien that evolves past his predecessor and exterminates the predecessor. It's been going on since the beginning of time. It's been going on in the hominid groups from at least the time of Tumeyman 7 million years ago. It's the way of evolution. Why should we apologize for the normal course of evolution? Well, actually, the reason the white man's genes are recessive is because he's very, very refined out of the gross Negroid genetic material, has evolved a very fine, rare, special gene that created the white man. It's sort of the difference between hemp and silk, or let's say coarse wool and silk. The whole world is full of coarse wool, but silk is very difficult to create, very fine, very special. Yet, if you take your beautiful, fine silk and throw it into a bunch of water with a bunch of rough, coarse hemp or wool, the silk will be torn apart. That's the way it is with the white genetic material in relationship to the black genetic material. You could say the black genetic material is stronger, but it's not. It's just heavier, thicker, grosser, commoner, and stupider. So that's why you cannot mix the races any more than you would mix the silk fiber with the wool fiber. You can't mix the white man with the black man. The result will be a total destruction of the white race. That's why we say we don't like forced integration, because it results in the extermination of the white race. But as for the white man not being native to Europe, he most assuredly is. The black man was still walking around parts of Europe in the form of his Neanderthal body 770,000 years after the white man took up residence in East Anglia, already fashioned into a tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde. The white man is far, far older, far more beautiful, far closer to God, more spiritual, more creative, has a better sense of humor, and is much sexier than the animal Neanderthal, which is what I think the black man is more akin to. Now, it may be that the black man isn't even as elevated as Neanderthal. It may be that he still carries Homo erectus DNA, because he certainly looks more like Homo erectus, which came before Neanderthal. He acts more like Homo erectus. Homo erectus was a knuckle-dragging, stooped-over, bestial kind of a creature that had a terrible way of tearing his fellow man apart. Very nasty, cannibalistic, vicious kind of a creature. It may be that the black man is more closely akin to Homo erectus than even Neanderthal. But no matter how you cut it, the white man has the least animal blood, and it's obvious, just looking at the man, and then looking at the black man, that there's something terribly wrong with the black man, and something awfully right with the white man. So when Jesus went on the cross, he paid for the price of all of these serial killers and maniacs who have to go to jail for a whole lifetime, because if you're God and you go on the cross for 3 hours, that sort of equalizes all of these life sentences that your followers don't have to pay for. Is that the theory of salvation? Well, what about Jesus coming back after he was dead? Did anybody notice that he did that? He died and then he came back. Remember, he rose from the dead, left the cave, and walked around with his disciples for about 40 days. Well, if that's true, you have to ask yourself if he was really dead. I mean, that's not an unreasonable question, isn't it? There's a guy who was crucified, and he was seen walking around with his friends for 40 days. It's not unreasonable to say, did he really die? And here's the problem with that. Jesus was crucified on Passover Day or something like that. It was a holiday. So they didn't keep the men on the cross for the entire 3 day period or 8 day period or 90 day period that they usually just left them hanging on the crosses, because when this holiday occurred, they took all the men down off the crosses in honor of the holiday, including Jesus. If you will recall, they took him down off the cross, I think it was in about 6 o'clock at night, and he was only on the cross for 3 hours. And if you'll remember, they gave him some herb to drink just before he died, remember? They gave him vinegar on a sponge or wine on a sponge, which he did not drink. Now, I don't know what that means, but maybe he didn't die. Maybe he was doing something besides dying. Maybe he was not dying. Because another thing they didn't do that they normally did was they didn't break his legs. If you'll recall, it says that for some reason they didn't break his legs. I don't remember what the reason was. But anyway, so therefore he could walk around with his friends, you see, if he didn't die and if they didn't break his legs. And then, in fact, they said, well, if you don't break his legs, at least let's kill him with a sword. So the guy, the soldier, took a sword and stuck it in his belly. But then another odd thing happened. He didn't bleed red blood. He bled some kind of clear liquid. So, right, his side. Well, it's a big deal. They put the sword in his side, not his belly. But what's the difference? The point is they put the side in his thorax. And it didn't bleed red blood. It bled clear liquid. So, right, it was a spear, not a sword, I guess. The point is, if you wanted to raise from the dead and walk around with your friends for 40 days before you made your next move, it would be very advisable, would it not, that your legs not be broken, that you stay on the cross only 3 hours, and that if they had a habit of giving you poison, you should refuse it. So I realize it's somewhat sacrilegious to bring up these minor details, but frankly, his death doesn't pass the smell test. Well, there's one thing that Rev didn't get completely right. The white man did not turn the Negro loose onto white civilization. The Jew did that. Please understand your history. It is Jews who have always controlled the worldwide slave trade. That is the reason that the Khazar, Turkish Asiatics, who lived in the southeast of Russia, converted to Judaism in 700 AD. They wanted to get a piece of the action of the worldwide slave trade, which was controlled by Jews. So when you talk about the white man loosing the Negro onto white civilization, that has to be qualified. It was not the white man. It was the Jew. The Jew convinced the white man that he could buy these Negro slaves and that the Negroes would be good servants. But the Negroes have never been good servants. It was another Jewish trick. You know, the Jews are famous for cheating in business. This was another one of their cheating tricks. They took perfectly useless Negroes out of Africa and sold them as if they were decent servants, which they were not. So that's, I just wanted to make that one correction to what Rev said. Rev said that the white man loosed the Negro onto the white civilization. That is not correct. It was the Jew who turned the Negro loose onto white civilization. The pharaohs were not black. The pharaohs were white. The reason the black people think the pharaohs were black is because they so desperately need to believe that Africans have done anything. But of course, Africans have not done anything. The North Africans, if you want to call them Africans at all, that lived in Egypt, would have had been more closely related to the Greeks and the Israelis than they would be to the sub-Saharan Negro. But in fact, they were related to neither. Although, yes, they were related to the Greeks, but the Greeks at that time were white. So, as a matter of fact, white men built your pyramids. White men organized the advanced Egyptian culture that was able to feed and sustain all of Africa and all of Arabia during the drought seasons by creating makework in the form of Egyptians for these unskilled laborers to work on in exchange for a little bit of food and shelter. So that's what was going on with the pharaohs. But it's really important to understand these differences in race. The fact that the two bones of the nose are occasionally united in the Negro as they are in apes. The fact that the curvatures of the spine are more ape-like in the Negro. The fact that the ears are roundish and rather small, like an ape. The fact that the brain itself is much smaller as it is in the ape. Why is it so important to understand these things? Because if we don't, then how are we going to explain the fact that blacks cannot function on as high a level as whites in schools and on tests? If we don't face the fact that the blacks are intellectually inferior, we're going to have to continue to blame the white man for holding the black man back and go through yet another 100 years of beating the white man to death and insisting on race mixing so that the white man is completely exterminated. And that's going to result in a world with no white man. We'll have Western civilization built by the white man and no white man to carry it forward. And that would be indeed a tragedy. Profiling is an absolute necessity in the police officer's bag of weapons. He has to be allowed to use probabilities and statistics when focusing on suspects in a crime. You can basically just kiss off the idea of law and order if you don't allow the police officer to profile. Because if the police officer knows, and yes, he does know, that 99% of all drug crimes occur in a certain 4-block area, and you tell him that when a crime involving drugs occurs, he's not allowed to go into that area, you're telling that police officer that he has to do magic. And he cannot do magic, so he stays in the precinct and plays cards. He's not stupid. He's not going to go and try to solve a drug crime when he knows good and well that it occurred in the 4-block area that you tell him he's not by law allowed to go to, because that would be profiling. What an imbecilic idea it is to tell a police officer he's not allowed to profile crime suspects. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And until we allow the police officer to use common sense, statistics, probabilities, which equals profiling, we have no police force. And we might as well admit it. If you're happy without a police force, then go ahead and tell him he's not allowed to racially profile. But if you want law and order, you should tell the police officer he can do anything he wants to fight crime, as long as it's not illegal. And profiling is certainly not supposed to be illegal. To make profiling illegal, you are making statistics illegal, just as you made genetics illegal when you made racism illegal. You simply go too far in proselytizing this state-imposed religion of multi-ethnicity, which has no basis in reality, is therefore a cult, and is doomed to explode eventually when the fallacies upon which it is based are hopelessly exposed, hopefully, without too much chaos to the civilization. It's a terrible thing that primitivism has become so trendy nowadays that it could actually sell Cadillacs, which used to be sold under the idea that discriminating people bought Cadillacs. Now it's becoming so trendy for people to rock and roll with the blacks that they're actually using hip-hop to sell Cadillacs. But I promise you, my white brothers and sisters, this is a fad that will quickly pass, and once again we'll see white women in pastel plaid selling Cadillac cars. Well, gotta change that. Those girls would be selling Fords, wouldn't they? The Cadillac will once again be sold by the beautiful platinum blonde in the black mink coat. Thank God that trends and fads pass, as we know they surely do. It's true, I'm afraid, that white people are going to have to face the fact that they've made black people hate them. We certainly have been very unkind to black people, haven't we? We took them over in 1650 as slaves, put them in our cotton fields, took them out of Africa where they were being eaten by the lion, the tiger, the bear, and their fellow black cannibal. And we put them into warm cabins. Each man had his own cabin. Did you know that? More than the average white person has today, more than I have with my $100,000 condo, these black people had. They had their own cabin, their own little piece of land. They lived in their one-room cabin. I assume it's one room. I only have seen them from the outside. They are square. The black man lived there with his black wife and his family. And poor soul, he had to get up in the morning, go out into the cotton field, and work all day, and then come home. Gee, weren't we the cruelest people in the world? Isn't that the most horrible thing? To expect a man to work for a living, and in exchange all we gave him was a house and a home, 3 meals a day, warm clothes, and medical care. I really, really feel sorry for the blacks. And then, after the Civil War, we didn't even allow them to marry white people for 100 years. Isn't that nasty? These poor black people were forced to marry other black people. Until, of course, we had this new change in the 60s when we gave them civil or human rights. And you know what happened to the black race? Instead of having 80% intact family rate, which they had before the 1960s, they now have an 80% illegitimacy rate. That's how we helped the Negro. We should have just treated the Negro with the respect we'd been treating them with since day one, accepting them for what they were, workers capable of working in the field, kept them separate so they wouldn't be demoralized by having to associate too closely with whites, allowed them to learn at their own rate, and they would have still had 80% intact families, and they would have still been pursuing educations as they were in the 40s and the 50s, instead of having 40% of them in prisons because they can't cope with the educational system that puts them side by side with white kids. I think we've been so cruel to the black person, but the truth is the cruelest thing we ever did was to pretend to love him when we didn't. We should have continued with our integrity and honesty, accepted the fact that whites and blacks are the farthest from the spectrum, They're from the farthest points of the color scale. They should not be mixing. If you want to integrate, integrate blacks with browns and whites with yellows. But for God's sake, don't integrate blacks with whites. There's just one more tiny point that needs to be made. And that's that the higher level intelligence races have recessive genes. And it's terribly important to understand that when a white marries a black, he only has a 1 in 8 chance of producing a white child with impressive raised frontal lobes and the white man's brain, which is 20% bigger, denser, and better than the black man's brain, which is why race mixing has to be discouraged. The inevitable tendency of mixing races is to produce children that are less intelligent and results in the extermination of the higher races. So not only are the races different, but unfortunately, the lower level races have stronger, more dominant genes. That's why we have to encourage the reproduction of the higher intelligent races, discourage the reproduction of the lower intelligent races, and I suggest we go back to making it illegal to have the races mix. After all, miscegenation has been against the law until the Supreme Court of the United States said it couldn't be against the law anymore because it hurts the feelings of the lower level races. It's too important that we keep the future generation's intelligence at a high rate so that they can face life's problems with as much intelligence as they can possibly get. We have to think of the future kids, not of the feelings of the black people, when we construct a social engineering plan. I see nothing wrong with at least educating the kids and let them know how much damage they're going to do to their children if you breed downward. Let the men know, okay, the Oriental girl is awfully nice to you. She's a beautiful sex slave, but your kids are not going to have that big, beautiful white brain if you do. And they're not going to have that silky hair, that silky wavy hair, and that type of skin and that characteristic face. You pay a price when you trade those characteristics and you breed outside of your race. And up to now, in the last 50 years, we haven't even been allowed to talk about it, much less teach an actual course in genetics in school. I think we should at least educate our kids as to the impact race mixing will have on their children. If we can't go back, as I would like to go back, to making it actually illegal to marry between the races. And I'm not crazy for saying this. Don't forget that in our own military, we did not allow our soldiers to date Oriental women when they went to duty in the Oriental cultures. It was not allowed. You got some kind of a horrible discipline if you did that because it was recognized that it was not the right thing to do for the sake of the children. We've completely lost touch with that whole idea. But our kids are now paying the price. You're seeing kids walking down the streets that look like Klingon monsters, and they don't have the brains of the intelligent parent because of the fact that the genetic imperative is for race mixing to cause the child to become less, not more, intelligent. You're seeing kids all over the place now that have little characteristics of the superior race, but their brains are sluggish because of that genetic downward pull. I'm very familiar with the false idea that intellect destroys spirituality. That's not true. According to yoga, the intuition is based on the intellect. The human abilities start with sexuality, the next step is intellectuality, the next step is intuitive, then love, and then the psychic abilities. So one is built on top of the other. It is not true, as the marijuana people would like to have you think, that destroying your frontal lobe is going to increase your spirituality. But I do understand the theory. It goes sort of like this. Oh, I'm having a hard time in my math class. Don't Bogart the joint. Whiff, 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 whiff. Oh, the colors, the colors. I am such a spiritual giant. But it really isn't true. Spirituality does not become enhanced as the intellect is destroyed. It just seems like it does. You won't believe what I'm looking at on the National Geographic Channel. Adult circumcision for a guy named Tondo in sub-Saharan Africa. They make this guy put mud on his face, and then he sits down by a tree, and here comes a guy with a spear, and he jumps on him really quick, and he stabs him in the pee-pee, and he takes his foreskin off, and the guy goes through all kinds of pain, and he's supposed to bear it without any complaint, and then they bury the foreskin in the ground. The guy's about 25 years old. Maybe he's 20. And it's supposed to make him into a man. And they have other rituals too. This is a movie, a little show called Taboo. They are torturing each other with tortures that no human being would ever think of doing to each other. And for what? So they can feel a feeling of kinship with each other. They produce nothing. They create nothing. They're starving to death. Oh, and they wash off the spear before they go on to the next guy so they can cut down on the incidence of AIDS. Now, on the National Geographic Channel, they're showing an Apache Indian tribe that tortures their virgins in various ways to prepare them for womanhood. You've never seen anything so gross in your life as the things these people do to their children just for fun. And it's not as if it makes them into better people. These people are the most passive, uncreative, stupid tribes of people in the world. At best, they can come up with a culture that provides everybody with a serving of corn. That's all they have in their culture. They all stand up and they stand in these huge lines every day at dinner time, and somebody slops them out a bunch of corn mush. That's all they can create, a bread line. So for entertainment, they torture each other. It's just astonishing. And there's these, they're doing it all over the world. The sub-Saharan Negroes are doing it. The American Indians are doing it. I'm sure there are places in India where they do it. These people are not subhuman. They are not human. Okay, now they're saying that America's culture is actually the bad culture because in our culture we prize productivity. Unlike the humane cultures where they torture their children and give each other adult circumcisions. Oh, I forgot to tell you, with these adult circumcisions in sub-Saharan Africa, sometimes you die. The beauty of the thing is, the beauty of the ritual is, in their mind, this is what makes it a holy experience. They rip off your foreskin with a spear, and hopefully it won't get infected, but a lot of times it does, or you bleed to death. At any rate, they put you in a hut, and this is the man, and you have to stay there until you heal or die. And you can't have any water or anything to eat, because if you do, you will pee, of course, and that would hurt your penis, which has just been ripped apart. So that's supposed to be a manly and wonderful way to create responsible citizens in this sub-Saharan Negro tribe. Then they showed how the Apaches torture their virgins. And then they turn to America and they say, America is a basically immoral country, because unlike these elevated spiritual countries that I've just described that practice torture on their own people for fun, America doesn't accept you unless you're productive, unless you're a successful capitalist. And so in a capitalist society, what happens after you're no longer productive is that you end up old. And then they show pictures of old people who can't feed themselves, and they say, this is the cruelty of the American system. They don't bother to tell you that everybody gets old unless they die first, and that we all end up vegetables eventually. They don't say that. It's like, only in America do old people turn into vegetables. And therefore, the American culture is the truly evil culture because it doesn't love old people. Never mind that nobody else loves old people either. I'm telling you, this National Geographic thing is communist propaganda. They are talking in philosophical, reverent terms about human tortures that would disgust the average person. And then they criticize America because we prize productivity, as if that were intrinsically evil. I have nothing against our country or any other ethical world leader being policemen of the world and stomping all over rogue terrorist states or communities. The problem is, once you become in a position of that much power, you have to be impeccably ethical. And it doesn't look ethical to me for our country to be completely neglecting the horrors of what the Rwandans did to the white people, what's going on in South America in terms, I think it's Colombia and Nicaragua, where they have these terrorist cells that kidnap Americans as soon as they can and hold them up for ransom, and nobody pays any attention to it. The United States just lets it go untampered with. But here, where we've been attacked at 9/11 and we have good evidence to believe that Israel was involved in it, we're succumbing to Israel's influence and doing Israel's will. So we have what looks like a corrupt world police force. And that's what Americans have to fight against. We're the only people in the world that have freedom of speech and must speak out against a government that's using its power, which is rightfully come by its power, but it's using it wrongfully. It's not using it in the interests of world peace or even in the interests of aggressive interests of the United States of America. It's using its power to satisfy its enemy. It's the enemy with which it's in bed, Israel.
Well, that's it for tonight, folks. I hope you enjoyed this evening's edition of the Holohoax. Tune in again next week, same time, same station. And don't forget, we in America still have freedom of speech. That puts a special burden on us to speak up against the Jew. In 7 white Christian countries, it's against the law to speak up the Jew, as I have done tonight. And I would go to jail for 5 years in Germany, Austria, England, France, Australia, and Sweden and Switzerland. Let's not let it happen here in America. The only way we're going to save our freedom of speech, ladies and gentlemen, is to use it. If you don't use it, you will lose it. So please, get in touch with Alex DeCivita at rahoa.org, also known as thewhiteplanet.org. Ask him if you can spend $10 of your money for an hour of his time to broadcast your thoughts and ideas. Speak up loudly, ladies and gentlemen, even if you're young and still in your teens. Your brain is at its most efficient at the age of 16. So don't believe what you hear. Listen to what you hear, but believe what you see and speak about what you see. That's the only way we're going to stay alive as a race and preserve the vision of our founding fathers here in the United States of America.